Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of our radically democratic future.
Speaking with Brett Hill, he's editor of Loving More magazine, New Models for Relationships. It's a magazine devoted to polyamory and polyfidelity, which we'll dilate on in a second. He's also a counselor and a computer consultant. Welcome, Brett.
Hello.
I want to talk to you because your website, of course, first attracted my attention, and congratulations on that. What exactly is the website address again?
Well, the website is trying to put out some information to people that there's more than one way to do relationship responsibly in this country. And so we have articles and stories and places, bulletin boards and places for people to get information about other people as well as groups and things forming around the country to investigate various ways of doing relationship besides the traditional monogamous mold.
And what's the URL for that?
The URL is www.lovemore.com.
Okay, we'll announce that again at the end.
Yeah.
And Loving More is a bi-monthly magazine?
Quarterly, actually.
Quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you come to become editor or co-editor of that?
Well, I was in a community where people... A community where people practice with polyamory for quite a while. And whenever I wound up moving on, I started looking around to see who was doing anything in the nation about putting out material about, you know, basically the freedom to create relationships as we wish. And I found Ryan Nearing and Deborah Annapole were the only people doing anything. And I went to a conference where they were both going to be there, and I met Ryan, and we had a big connection, and we wound up getting together. And so I wound up hooking up with her already existing publication as co-editor. She's been doing it much longer than I have.
Oh, really? Ryan founded the magazine?
Yeah, she founded it some 15, 16 years ago.
Oh. So this magazine came out of a time when this kind of thing used to be called swinging.
Well, I don't know if what we're talking about was ever called swinging, because what we're really talking about is not casual sex, but having multiple partners in your life that you have connections with and that you want in your life for more than just recreational sex. Mm-hmm. As far as I know, and I don't consider myself top-of-the-line expert on this, but I'm fairly well-informed. Swinging is mostly about sexuality or having sex with people, not necessarily people that you know, and certainly not with the intention of going out and finding partners in your life that you want to have around forever or for even long periods of time.
Mm-hmm. And this is also different from cheating or from the old idea of an open marriage?
Well, cheating is completely different than the old idea of open marriage, where, of course, you know, cheating is the social norm these days, where people will, you know, get married, make commitments they can't keep, cheat, and lie about it. Mm-hmm. And whereas open marriage is an effort in the direction to put some honesty into that process.
Mm-hmm. So polyamory is another form of open marriage.
I would say it includes the notion of open marriage.
It includes it. The movement seems to be growing. There are conferences and books and multiple organizations and websites.
Yeah.
That's your impression as well?
Oh, yeah. It's a fact. It really is. Mm-hmm. I mean, we just know from the fact that we've been around for so long and that, in fact, we were the only organization at all in either this country or any other for a long time that we know about. And then now there are multiple organizations, and we have a page listed to local groups that are forming all over the country. And so just the you know, using the indicator that how many local support groups are forming as some basis for indicating interest in the culture at large, then you could say that it's up, you know, many thousandfold over the last couple of decades, and it just seems to be just starting off. We're still at the very low end of the curve, but we're moving into a bigger part of the curve.
Now, there is an historical precedent for this idea. The Owen community, Oneida community, had the idea of plural marriage.
Sure.
And there are some communal experiments in this country today who have kind of similar plural marriage concepts, polyfidelity in a very organized way.
Well, there have been some. Most of them haven't worked very well. And almost all of the ones that have been organized that had any substance to them were very leader-centric organizations, and still are to a large degree, the ones that still survive. For all the bennies, for all the problems that you get for having if you want to call it guru, that's one thing. If you want to call them like a central leader, that's another. For all the problems that creates, one of the benefits is that it helps create a certain kind of stability, in that the groups tend to last longer and people tend to overcome more obstacles because they have an external focus that helps them kind of resolve or harmonize their differences. However, the downside to all that is, of course, people tend to give up a fair amount of their personal freedoms to a group leader as opposed to a group process that they're really committed to in some way.
So most of the people who are involved in polyamory today are people who value liberty highly and are not involved in communal experiments?
I'd say by far, in a way, the majority are just simply individuals who have found or never wanted to come up against the hard lesson that monogamy is a contract, sexual fidelity for the rest of my life with one partner is simply not a high percentage risk to in terms of not a high risk, but a high percentage bet, in the sense that the chances of any one person actually doing that for their entire life are not that great when you look at all the facts and figures. So why make a commitment that is that very likely one or the other partner is going to break and therefore lead to all kinds of problems and difficulties? But instead, let's look at the way that humans actually behave and try to construct relationships around that.
Now, there's increasing evidence from animal studies that most mammals are non-monogamous. Is that right?
Yes, we've known that for some time. But as people do better and better studies, they find that even those that they loudly proclaimed were monogamous turn out that they're not. And in fact, they're not by wide margins. It's just that when you look at the world through monogamous eyes, you see monogamy. You know, everywhere that's what you see. But if you look at it through more practical eyes of what's actually happening, then around the world, you see all different forms of relationship, not just what we're doing. One of the problems that is constantly amazing to me is how people believe that what we do in the United States is the only way that it's done anywhere and ever has been done, and any other notion is inferior by the fact that it's different, which, of course, you know, basically says to a lot of cultures who've been doing multi-partner relationships for a long time, for better or for worse, that their notion, that the way that they do their lives are immoral, unethical, and they're raising children that ought to be put in jail, you know?
Well, the missionary approach to polygamy when they first discovered it.
Yeah, exactly. It was to wipe it out by putting fear into people. But there are still places where you'll find multi-partner forms in the social structures that are fairly widely accepted, either covertly or overtly. Japan, you know, is widely covertly accepts the fact that men are going to have mistresses, but no one talks about it. Same is true in other places, in Italy, and then in other places there are behaviors like the Eskimo practice of hunting partners, sharing a relationship with the wives is very widely accepted and out in the open and honest, and is considered an honor.
Mm-hmm. There's also the institution in Tibet, or there was before the Chinese occupation, of wives sharing husbands, one of the few cases.
There's not very many cases of polyandry, but there are, and particularly in places where there are many more women than men due to war or famine. If you start looking at it culturally, that the way that marriages and the rituals and what's accepted evolved is very largely related to what are the circumstances of the culture. If there happen to be, some men with, if the men concentrate the wealth in the culture, then the multi-partner wives are allowed. If the women concentrate the wealth in the culture, then multi-partner husbands are allowed. It's no mistaking that as a theme.
Mm-hmm. Now, there aren't very many studies yet of the polyamory movement at being so young, and the few studies in the 70s, as we've discussed before, focused mostly on swinging and just sexual experimentation.
Right.
But studies that have been done on polygamous societies and the attitudes of women towards their arrangements acknowledge that there is jealousy occasionally and possessiveness in those arrangements, but that people get by. Is that your experience? Or are you a utopian in the belief that you could get past jealousy?
Well, it just depends on who you are. Some people I've met who I believe, I just think there are different temperaments and different characters, and just sort of either, whether it's genetic or inbred, who knows, or trained, who knows, the point is that as adults, certain people have our propensity towards more jealousy than others. Some men, for example, get really, really jealous if the wife gets a phone call or a piece of mail, or they don't know where they are constantly. So they imagine things, and they're jealous in the face of absolutely no evidence they're imagining things, and so they take absolutely no stimulation to kick off the jealousy circuits. Other people can have their partners being made love to in front of their eyes, and it doesn't kick off the jealousy circuit. But if they start talking about how much they care about someone, that kicks it off, which is sometimes happens in swinger circles. It's like, sure, you can make love to my partner, but don't tell me that you care about them. So it really is different for different people.
Now, one of the issues that I've written about, actually, in my interest in this topic over time, is the relative stability of non-monogamous relationships. And would you, in your experience, are non-monogamous relationships less stable or equally stable as monogamy?
I'd say they're slightly less stable than monogamous relationships, simply because you have more characters involved. But monogamous relationships aren't very stable. With the divorce rate approximately 50%, and those are just the people that are getting married. How many relationships, how many quote-unquote monogamous relationships do they have up to that point? Maybe 4, 5, 6 monogamous quote-unquote relationships all the way up to the point where they get married, and in the course of a marriage, probably a couple of liaisons. And so are those successful, stable relationships? I don't know. You tell me. But in polyamory, people's behaviors isn't any different. We're just trying to incorporate the fact that people may or likely to want more than one partner in their life into the relationship structure. So I think that taking that up front, you knock out a big instability in monogamous relationships, and the fact that if a partner has somebody else, isn't going to be a surprise. Because you know that up front.
So to turn to children, which is the reason that many people engage in monogamy in the first place, do you think that the effects on children are a wash, that there's just as much marital stability or instability, or that there are more potential parents around, or what's your experience with that?
Excuse me a second. My experience is that it depends entirely on how the children are raised, and the structure of the family isn't as important as the relationships with the children. It doesn't matter if there's two loving parents or three loving parents or four loving parents. The child, as long as the child isn't confused about who their real mother and father are. I'm not a believer in, some people have even promoted the notion of like not telling the kids who the biological parents are and just, letting them be raised by four or five people. I think that's absurd. I think the child needs to know who its biological parents are, and that those people need to be the parents, and that the other people need to be support people, and have strong relationships and some degree of parental authority, because they're like adults in the house and they want to tell the child not to stick the screwdriver in the socket, and the child needs to respond to that, but not necessarily as a, at the same level as a biological mother and father. As long as the parents aren't confused, the child isn't confused.
Now, the growing acceptance of bisexuality and homosexuality in our society has probably changed the conditions under which people engage in polyamory. All of the experiments I know about historically were strictly heterosexual. Would you say that the polyamory movement has benefited by the growing acceptance of bisexuality or people's experimentation with it? And are bisexual unions more stable because there's less jealousy if everyone's sharing sexually?
Well, that's a multi-layered question. The first part being, have we benefited? Has polyamory movement benefited? Yes, it's benefited because as people explore their sexuality and their potentials in relationship, they begin to open their minds about what's possible. Certainly, people coming from a traditional heterosexual monogamous society, exploring bisexuality is a breakout of that mold, and anybody who begins to think for themselves based on their own sensation and experience will eventually begin to consider the notion that polyamory is a possibility under the right circumstances. The other part of the question about does that actually create more stability is a who knows. I think anytime you introduce more variables, like the fact that you could have multiple partners with multiple sexual orientations, you increase you create instability points or points of instability. So I won't say that it creates more stability, but it doesn't necessarily make it less stable. It all really just depends.
Yeah, I was thinking about the circumstance under which if you were involved in a threesome and two partners never were in bed together of that threesome, that would be more rife for potential jealousy.
Well, it could be jealousy, but jealousy might not be the thing that creates instability. There's all different kinds of things. There can be power, there can be control, there can be money, there can be career, there can be how much time someone is away, there can be all kinds of things that can create instabilities. I know a threesome that's been together for like 20 years, and one of the partners decided to go to medical school, and that's what split them up. Things like that, because can create problems. You can't really draw the lines along sexual connections and say that if there's as many lines as there are partners, that creates stability. It doesn't necessarily work that way. You have a lot of trios that are basically heterosexual and that have been stable for many, many years. And then again, I've seen bisexuals and homosexual couples and triples and be also stable for many, many years. So I don't think the sexual orientation is a predictor of stability.
You sell from Loving More magazine the book Three in Love, which is a recent collection of famous stories from history of threesomes. Who are the authors of that again?
Barbara Foster, Michael Foster, and Letha Haydady, Haddy.
I was fascinated by their personal story because I'm a Buddhist as well, and they met while they were writing a book together on the life of Alexander David Neal.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to also address the issue of Utah polygamy, which has the governor of Utah has recently been under fire for having commented in an offhand way that he thought that a campaign against the continuing practice of polygamy, which is formally illegal in Utah and everywhere else in the country,
right?
That he thought that should be covered under religious freedom. And Utah feminists and Mormon feminists have really gotten on his case about that, anti-polygamy activists. And there are also polygamists who have been campaigning for his legalization. And in my mind, this is connected up with gay marriage. Do you, Loving More, does the polyamory movement see legal changes to acknowledge and recognize and institutionalize polyamorous relationships as part of their agenda?
As part of whose agenda? The polygamists?
The polyamory movement.
Oh, it's part of, eventually, yes. That would be great, because I believe that consenting adults, should be free to be in relationship with whomever they wish, however they wish to be in it. As long as everyone is agreeable and no one is obviously being abused, then I don't see any real problems in saying, this is a free country and we have religious freedom and we have, theoretically, and other different forms of freedom, that the state has any business saying that you don't deserve to be able to be married to someone of your same sex or two or three people if you want to. I don't see what business they have in it whatsoever.
Well, I can heartily endorse that. Well, I've really much appreciated your being with us today, and your URL is www.lovemore.
Yes, L-O-V-E-M-O-R-E.
M-O-R-E.com.
Right.
And you can find out about how to subscribe to Loving More magazine there, and also the many books and conferences that you help organize.
Right, and so people can find out about us there, or they can call information. We also have an 800 number, which is 800-424-9561, and we'll send them some information.
Great, and again, I've been speaking to Brett Hill, the co-editor of Loving More magazine. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS-FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. Also check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com.